From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
How serious was it that a clash could have happened in the skies between Russian and American fighters?
I have no details.
A heated exchange at the United Nations Security Council in New York City Saturday after Russia called an emergency meeting in the wake of the U.S. bombing of Syrian troops in direct violation of the recently reached ceasefire agreement.
Even by Russia's standards, tonight's stunt, a stunt replete with moralism and grandstanding, is uniquely cynical and hypocritical.
This was Russia's ambassador to the United Nations, Vitaly Churkin, at a press conference outside the council chamber Saturday.
Well, actually, in all my years in the United Nations, that is over 10 years, and in all my years in international life, I have never seen, which is over 40 years, I have never seen such an extraordinary display of American heavy-handedness as we are witnessing today. As I was talking in the Security Council, sharing our analysis and frustration over the situation of Syria, Ambassador Power chose to talk to you. The only thing her deputy had to say in response to my comments was that the U.S. is investigating what has happened at Deir Ezzor. As Ambassador Power walked in, first thing she said, she was not interested in what I had to say, because what I was saying is a stunt. So there is no point in my listening to Ambassador Power. So I decided to leave the room. My delegation is there, and to share my reflections with you. This is a very serious concern that we wanted and we did share today with the members of the Security Council. As you know, we convened the consultations of the Security Council because the United States has bombed the Syrian armed forces in Deir Ezzor. And Deir Ezzor, of course, is one of the most important symbols of resistance against ISIL, because it has been besieged by ISIL for a very long time, for a couple of years. The Syrian armed forces suffered serious casualties, over 60 soldiers killed, over 100 soldiers injured. And there is a threat of ISIL advancing on Deir Ezzor. Fortunately, our air forces, Russian air forces, were able to come to the assistance of the Syrian armed forces. So we hope this tragedy of ISIL taking Deir Ezzor is not going to happen. Having conducted this airstrike, the United States has violated two of its commitments. One is the commitment to cessation of hostilities, which the United States undertook together with us in February, and which we reconfirmed just a few days ago. And the other is the commitment the United States gave to the government of Syria when the United States started its air campaign 2 years ago. The United States promised to the Syrian government that their airstrikes are not going to affect the position of the Syrian armed forces. That did not put the United States fully in line with the international law, because they did not receive the consent of the Syrian government. But the fact that the United States committed not to strike the position of the Syrian government created certain conditions for continued cooperation with the United States politically and on a number of practical aspects of the situation in Syria. It is quite significant and frankly suspicious that the United States chose to conduct this particular airstrike at this time. Why would all of a sudden the United States choose to help the Syrian armed forces defending Deir Ezzor? After all, they did nothing when ISIL was advancing on Palmyra. ISIL made a 100-mile march without being attacked by the coalition. All of a sudden, the United States decides to come to the assistance of the Syrian armed forces defending Deir Ezzor. It is quite significant, and I would suggest not accidental, that this happened just 2 days before the arrangements, Russian-American arrangement, were supposed to come into force. The arrangements were been negotiating with the United States for a long time. As you know, after lengthy negotiations on the 9th of December, Foreign Minister Lavrov and Secretary Kerry concluded an agreement on September 9, which actually put in force a number of agreements which they had negotiated over the period of the previous 2 months. For reasons we cannot fully understand, the United States did not agree to share with you or even with the members of the Security Council the text of those documents. But I'll read two excerpts from them, from two of those documents, for you simply to understand what it was all about. Now, the preamble part of the document which was agreed upon on September 9, the Russian Federation and the United States intend to undertake joint efforts to stabilize the situation in Syria with special measures for the Aleppo region. Delineation of territories controlled by ISIL, Jabhat al-Nusra, and moderate armed opposition forces remains a key priority, as does separating moderate opposition forces from Nusra. Then an excerpt from one of the previous documents, the one which was negotiated in July. The purpose of the joint implementation group is to enable expanded coordination between the United States and the Russian Federation. The participants, the United States and the Russian Federation, through the joint implementation group, are to work together to defeat Jabhat al-Nusra and Daesh within the context of strengthening the cessation of hostilities and supporting the political transition process outlined in UN Security Council Resolution 2254. So those were extremely important arrangements, which in our view could really be a game changer and greatly help intensify our joint efforts to fight and defeat Nusra and ISIL, and also providing better conditions for the political process. There were other elements in those agreements. Some of them included a humanitarian aspect of the situation on the ground. As it was agreed, the operation of the Joint Implementation Group was supposed to take effect 7 days before the D-Day. D-Day was determined to be September 12. So the beginning of the work of the Joint Implementation Group was supposed to be September 19. So if the United States wanted to conduct an effective strike on Nusra in Deir ez-Zor or anywhere else, they could wait 2 more days and coordinate with our military and make sure and be sure that they are striking the right people. Instead, they chose to conduct this reckless operation. As you know, the United States, within the past few days, has been emphasizing the humanitarian situation, as it had been complaining that not all the things which were supposed to happen on the humanitarian level were happening. And in fact, we heard them say a few days ago that because of the humanitarian situation, there are no conditions to start implementing the arrangements of the Joint Implementation Group. But today we know that all the permissions which the Syrian government was supposed to give have been given for humanitarian supplies to reach people in need in various parts of Syria, and that the humanitarian convoy to eastern Aleppo is supposed to leave tomorrow morning. So clearly there are no more grounds to refrain from the implementation of the Joint Implementation Group arrangement in the humanitarian sphere of the situation. So it may well be, one has to conclude, that the airstrike has been conducted in order to disrupt the operation of the Joint Implementation Group and actually not to allow it to be set in motion. It may well be, and this is just a conjecture, that the United States is trying to hide the fact that they are actually not in control of the situation, that they allow the situation to get out of control. As you know, we have said that on numerous occasions. In February of this year, we were told by a high-level American official that it will take them 2 to 3 weeks to make sure that the so-called moderate opposition distances itself from Jabhat al-Nusra. It never happened. In fact, we saw some motions just a few days or weeks ago, but the real separation has not happened. Then we have received assurances from the United States that as we renew the cessation of hostilities, they will make sure that the so-called moderate opposition groups recommit also to this cessation of hostilities. But what we heard instead, that 20 of those groups, which in our assessment comprised 70% of the so-called moderate fighters, almost immediately declared that they were not going to comply with the renewed cessation of hostilities regime. So the way it looks is that the United States really allowed the genie to get out of the bottle, having been arming, preparing, training various armed opposition groups, ignoring the fact that they have been working with the Jabhat al-Nusra and other terrorist groups, ignoring the fact that many of those groups which they regarded as moderate opposition were resorting to terrorist tactics, and now they're out there not about to listen to those in Washington who are trying to reach political agreement. In fact, the big question which sort of I asked in consultation room, and which I think one has to ask those people who have been following the U.S. policies and been reading the statements which have been made by American politicians, who is in charge in Washington? Is it the White House or the Pentagon? Because we have heard statements from the Pentagon which simply fly in the face of what we have heard from President Obama and Secretary Kerry. So this is an extremely crucial time in our efforts to move Syria to a more peaceful situation and to make sure that we can fight the terrorists. Frankly, I don't know what the next step is going to be or what the next move we can expect. Unfortunately, from what I heard Ambassador Power say as she walked into the room, this is not a very good omen. They are losing control.
Do you, from what you said, it seems like Russian official adamantly believe that this wasn't a mistake and that it was a purposeful? And second question is a humanitarian. Are the convoys laden with food are starting to Aleppo tomorrow as planned before?
Yes. Very, very complicated scheme was worked out for the Castello Road, so that Castello Road could be used first for humanitarian supplies, and then as soon as other additional arrangements are put in place, could be used for all other traffic. So those arrangements are there, and the first convoy is supposed to proceed tomorrow morning. I suppose so.
My first question, from what you just said and told us, it seems that you are completely sure and convinced that this attack is not by mistake, it's not by
error. Well, you know, I've explained why I think it would be rather strange to believe that this is not a mistake, that all of a sudden they decided to help the Syrian government forces and without any coordination with us.
Is this the end of the deal between the United States and Russia?
I'm sorry?
Is this the end of the deal between the United States and Russia?
You know, as I say, this is a very big question mark. Very big question mark. I would be very interested to see how Washington is going to react, if what Ambassador Power has done today is any indication of their possible reaction, then we're in serious trouble. But I do hope that they will find a way to convince us and everybody else that they are serious about political settlement in Syria, that they are serious about fighting terrorists, and they would not allow those for whom any kind of cooperation is Russia with Russia is more dangerous politically or otherwise than the triumph of ISIL and terrorists in Syria and Iraq.
Ambassador, I wonder if you could clarify something for us, because there was a statement from the spokeswoman for your foreign minister in Moscow floating the idea that the U.S. was colluding directly with ISIL. Do you believe that to be the case?
Well, you know, one, of course, this is an extreme case scenario. I suppose this scenario is subjected by the fact that at times one had the impression that the United States is trying to protect Nusra on the ground. Colluding, well, we don't have specific evidence, but delivering airstrikes and quite effective airstrikes, you know, 60 people dead, 100 people injured against those who are fighting Nusra, you know, one wonders. Not Nusra, but ISIL.
Killed people by mistake as well, including a lot of civilians.
You know, I've explained in some detail why it is very strange to believe that has been an accidental thing. The timing, you know, and other aspects of the situation indicate that it may well be a provocation. But let's see what the next move is going to be from Washington. If they go about blaming Russia for everything, including this airstrike, then I'm afraid their intentions would become extremely clear.
The Security Council meeting on Syria to still take place? And what in particular about Ambassador Powers' comments leads you to believe we have trouble?
I'm sorry?
What was it about Ambassador Powers' comments that leads you to believe that there's no negotiations to be had?
Well, I was appalled that while I was talking, she was talking to the media. You know, this is a very serious thing. And then as she walked in, without hearing what I had to say, she said that what I said was a stunt, and then she didn't really care to hear what I had to say. After that, I walked out, you know, and others are listening to her ramblings. Yeah.
Understood. Do you expect the Security Council, the high-level Security Council meeting on Syria to still take
place?
Well,
this is a decision to be taken, you know. I think still a very serious discussion. The situation, under any kind of circumstances, I think this a very serious discussion would be proper.
The Pentagon has been quoted saying that they would consider condolence payments to the families of the Syrian soldiers killed. I'm wondering, do you have any response to that? What do you think of
no,
that?
No, I haven't heard the statement, but I haven't heard it. It's for the Syrian government to respond.
On Thursday, Ms. Power said that the Syrian army should not conduct any airstrikes in any area, including the areas which are populated by al-Nusra Front. Does the agreement of 9 September include that? And where does the Syrian army fall into that agreement?
The agreement, which was concluded on the 9th of September, does contain some provisions which limit the areas where the Syrian Air Force might be used.
Including, do you have intention, Mr. Ambassador?
The deal is that there were supposed to be certain sectors where al-Nusra is deployed, which would be taken care of by Russian and American Air Force. And since the presence of Russian and American Air Force would be there, there would be no need for the Syrian government to fly in those sectors.
Today, how serious was it that a clash could have happened in the skies between Russian and American fighters?
I have no details.
Ambassador, first of all, Madame Power said that she blamed the hypocritic politics by Russia. This is a clear accusation to Russia regarding the situation in Syria, that you've never called for a Security Council urgent meeting before on Syria, despite all the chemical weapon use and all that
stuff. This is demagoguery of the highest order. We have called meetings on various situations over the years. We have discussed Syria. We have discussed anything else. So I just don't know how to respond to, because it is demagoguery beyond my ability to respond. But as to blaming Russia for everything, and in fact, is there anybody from the Washington Post here? This is the line which they have been taking from time to time. I was struck by the line which ended the editorial of the Washington Post yesterday. It accuses Russia of a number of things, but then it says Russia launched millions of refugees from Syria to Europe in order to destabilize Europe. You know, we have warned them not to invade Iraq in 2003, which caused extreme stabilization of the Middle East. We warned them not to stabilize Libya and not to engage a regime change operation there. We warned them a quick regime change in Syria was not going to work. They chose to, you know, pump trillions of billions of dollars of weapons to some strange people, so-called moderate opposition groups who they cannot control any longer. You know, and now it's our fault that refugees are going from Turkey to Europe. So, of course, one can blame Russia or anybody else for everything, but I would rather they looked into the mirror and were more realistic and pragmatic and truthful in their analysis of their own actions.
Are you going to you quoted some of the agreements, some excerpt. Are you going to disclose those agreements unilaterally?
No, it's not our intention. But, you know, I think you now understand what it's all about. It is about closer cooperation in fighting ISIL. It is about making sure that humanitarian conditions in Syria can be improved. And it's something which can provide a better basis for the political process. If they choose to go into demagoguery and if they maybe, you know, score some political points, I think it's extremely, extremely tragic, actually, that this is the state of political play in the United States. Thank you very much.
The U.S. Permanent Representative to the U.N., Samantha Power, also spoke Saturday.
We are still gathering information at this time, but we have been able to confirm that earlier today the United States struck what we believe to be an ISIL target. We halted the attack when we were informed by Russia that it was possible that we were striking Syrian regime military personnel and vehicles. We are investigating the incident. If we determine that we did indeed strike Syrian military personnel, that was not our intention. And we, of course, regret the loss of life. This said, even by Russia's standards, tonight's stunt, a stunt replete with moralism and grandstanding, is uniquely cynical and hypocritical. Since 2011, the Assad regime has been intentionally striking civilian targets with horrifying, predictable regularity. They have besieged civilian areas, prevented life-saving humanitarian aid from reaching people who are starving to death and dying of illnesses that could be treated with basic medicine, which is ripped out of trucks and pocketed by Syrian regime forces. The Syrian government has patented the practice of double tap strikes, hitting a civilian target, waiting for heroically brave individuals to run into collapsing buildings, burning buildings, and then striking again so they can hit the rescue personnel. The regime has routinely used chemical weapons against its own people. It has tortured tens of thousands of people in its prisons, which now double as torture chambers. And indeed, in those prisons, it documents systematically what it's doing to the people in its custody. Serial numbers, written notes, carefully documenting the torture of people with such savagery, meticulous detail. And yet, in the face of none of these atrocities, has Russia expressed outrage, nor has it demanded investigations, nor has it ever called for a Saturday night emergency consultation in the Security Council, or a Monday day, or a Tuesday day, or a Wednesday day, Thursday day, Friday day, Saturday, Sunday, you name it. If there's a day of the week, they have never called an emergency consultation on any of these practices. These are some of the most systematic atrocities that we have seen in a generation. And not only are they not interested in seeing these crimes investigated, they have used their veto on the Security Council to block meaningful action, even though this is the most obvious threat to international peace and security that we've seen in a very long time. And a year ago, at the UN General Assembly, Russia decided to join the Assad regime, escalating the conflict, and perhaps worst of all, itself adopting some of the regime's worst practices, hitting hospitals, hitting refugee camps, hitting markets, without a single public expression of remorse. Seriously? And they're calling this emergency meeting? Really? Now, because of a single airstrike, a strike that if it struck regime forces, did so in error, a strike that we have swiftly acknowledged and committed to investigating, again, none of which the Assad regime or Russia have done in their airstrikes on innocent civilians, now, of all times, Russia calls the entire UN Security Council to convene urgently so that it can stand up here and express outrage. Imagine how often this council would be meeting if we were to gather every time the regime or Russia struck a hospital, or a school, or a breadline. Imagine if we gathered every time they blocked vital aid from reaching children who are eating leaves. Leaves, so that they do not starve to death. Or who block medicine from reaching people who are dying every single day because they are forced to drink foul water and because they have no antibiotics. There is so much to be justifiably outraged by in Syria, so much civilian suffering. Civilian suffering that could be prevented. Lives that could be saved if only the real perpetrators were made to stop. So if we could, this Saturday night and every day and night henceforth, if we could focus our outrage on that, that would be appropriate. We also are trying to focus on the present and the future, on the desperate need for peace in Syria. And let me just state for the record that we believe that Russia should in fact be convening an emergency meeting this evening. An emergency meeting with the Assad regime, which is bombing in defiance of the cessation of hostilities, which is continuing its practice of death by a thousand paper cuts, in starving Syria's civilians. The regime has to stop bombing those who have signed up for the cessation of hostilities. And Russia has to deliver the Assad regime, as in the course of the negotiations it assured us it would. Russia is not delivering on its end of the deal that we spent months negotiating in extremely technical detail. The United States is extremely serious about making this agreement work. In the last 36 hours, Secretary Kerry has spoken with UN envoy Staffan de Mistura, the foreign ministers of Turkey, of Qatar, Saudi Arabia. Of course, he has spoken also with Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov, including today. And Secretary Kerry told Foreign Minister Lavrov that the regime is bombing groups who are party to the cessation of hostilities. Even though violence is down in many parts of Syria, the regime is acting against groups that want to be part of this peace process. Secretary Kerry made clear that the aid is not flowing, even though we were assured again and again that permissions would be forthcoming, even though UN trucks have been idling, filled with precious food, as mothers can't feed their kids. So Secretary Kerry shared all this with Foreign Minister Lavrov, but he didn't have to, because Russia is fighting alongside the Assad regime. Russia knows exactly what's happening in Syria. They know exactly which groups are terrorists and which groups are opposition groups who want to be part of a political transition and who want a multi-confessional, pluralistic Syrian society on the back end. They know the difference. And so why are we having this meeting tonight? It's a diversion from what is happening on the ground in Syria. When you don't like the facts, try to create attention somewhere else. It's the classic magician's sleight of hand. Get the world and the media to focus here so they maybe take their eye a little bit off what's happening over there. What's happening over there is so important. It's jeopardizing something that gives the Syrian people a chance.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.